Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, you know what? Fake news seems to be everywhere, including some questionable medical research. And our physical therapists are back with us to talk about bogus information and how it can affect your health care. In the studio with me once again, Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum and Lori Tyne-Brody. Jill, an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program. Lori is a physical therapist and athletic trainer at the UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Have you come across medical information that you think may be fake? You can join in the conversation. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Jill, nice to have you back.
It's great to be here.
Lori, good to see you again.
It is awesome to be here on what feels like a spring day.
Right? Yeah, it does, doesn't it? We've all had source amnesia at some point, remembering, you know, what you think is fact, but not remembering where it came from.
Oh, yeah.
How does that relate to medical research?
Well, one of the big issues that medical researchers are struggling with today is something called predatory journals. And every day, Jill can tell you, we get a dozen solicitations or invitations to publish an article in their prestigious journal. We offer a quick turnaround and we promise a peer review and we'll publish you in 2 weeks. And so they tend to go after novice academicians, people who are early in their careers, who maybe aren't as savvy to the process and who really need to get those publications out for their tenure status. And we recently had some physical therapists who did a little sting operation.
Right, very well-respected published physical therapists within our community.
Right, who published, who get these same solicitations and decided to follow up on one. And so they fabricated a case report of performing spinal manipulations, 250 manipulations every hour, on a deceased person and how that could bring them back to life.
Oh,
I know that just the absurdity of the whole thing. If you read the whole thing and the things that they quoted and some of the important guidelines that we followed, they listed out some of the guidelines, including the TSA guidelines for bringing fluids on an airplane.
Oh,
things
man.
Like that were embedded in the article, and it was accepted for publication after quote unquote peer review.
Right.
Oh. Oh boy.
So the issue is it tends to taint all credible research. They will publish blatantly false information for a fee. So if you pay this $800 fee, they will publish anything that you write. They don't go through any kind of peer review. That's a joke. But the problem related to source amnesia is once some of these things get published, it elevates the fake research to a more credible status. So once you see it published somewhere by someone, and often these predatory journals have a name that's very close to that of a reputable, legitimate journal.
Mm-hmm.
So the average Joe on the street doesn't know the difference. I mean, it sounds like a really legitimate thing. And so they take the information as fact. And it literally takes years to unravel that and prove that false.
That is really too bad.
It is.
Well, how do you identify them aside from knowing that the TSA procedures are not going to help you come back to life?
Right. And most people, if they're looking at a journal article, probably are only going to read the abstract. They're not going to go into the details and see all this bogus information. So one of the things that you can look at is the impact factor. And impact factors are posted and listed by each journal. And it gives journals ranking by a non-biased, non-partisan organization.
Uh-huh.
And so they rate journals on the rigorousness of the articles, the frequency with which the articles are recited in another equally good, peer-reviewed journal with a high impact factor.
One of the caveats to that, though, is many of these predatory journals publish false impact factors on their websites. They blatantly lie about it. There was a paper that was done and published by School of Economics in Helsinki, and they looked at journal articles published in India and in Nigeria, where a lot of papers come out. And for every 100 legitimate papers, there were over 1,800 that were published in predatory journals that were blatantly false. And so, and some of these were recited over and over again, which contributes to the impact factor.
Yeah.
But they were it was false information.
So then the other thing you should consider is where your source is on the internet, and going to very reputable, upstanding sources is really good. Very large healthcare systems such as the Mayo Clinic, the Cleveland Clinic. Cleveland Clinic Foundation has a really good website. Those kind of websites that have very large healthcare organizations that are very, very commonly recognized names usually do a very good job of putting out the latest evidence in lay people terms. So it's the website is really geared for the lay person, not for the academician. So those are really good resources
to
consider.
So go to sources where you really know the
absolutely
source.
And you can also call your local clinician.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The problem is most people, when they do a Google search, will click on one of the very first things that pops up. And just because it's the first thing that pops up doesn't necessarily mean it's the best one. So you might have to scroll through that a little bit and look at the source. Look at what the website is, whether it's a, you know, reputable based hospital system, something like that, and then choose those, go to those links or those websites first, not just the first one that comes up.
All right. Well, we have callers and emailers with questions. By the way, if you'd like to join in, the number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And let's take a call from William in Madison. William, hi. Thank you for calling.
Well, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Probably pretty mundane question to most, but it's important to me, so
okay.
I thought I'd call. And so I'm a 43-year-old runner, and I started to have pain in my upper Achilles, lower calf, off and on over the last month, but over the last week, it's just been straight-up pain. I've kind of just worn a compression sock, and when it does give me pain off and on over the last month, but since it's been hurting the last week, I've just been straight-up wearing the compression sock, no exercise. It's certainly a lot less tender, but and I'm going to see a physical therapist. But I thought, while I'm waiting for that, I could call one. So.
All right.
Absolutely. And
any advice would be really
yeah, great. What do you think,
absolutely.
Jill?
So this came on without a mechanism of injury, so just kind of slowly, gradually?
Yeah, and then it just
blew up.
And it's just steady pain and and swelling, too. So.
Okay, all right.
Is it right at the muscle or at the tendon or the musculotendinous junction? Whereabouts in your lower calf?
Right where it would be the top of the Achilles lower tendon. I guess I can't be more specific. A couple of inches up from my flat old feet.
Is it so it's a couple inches up from where your Achilles would insert into your heel?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
So that would be considered truly an Achilles, and it sounds since you're in this flared up stage and a truly Achilles tendonitis. So it sounds like you have an inflammatory process going on there. And the tendon looks and feels thicker than the other side?
Yeah, most definitely.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Well, right now you are in the get things calmed down stage, and so that is rest, some icing. You could maybe do some gentle massage in that area, see if you can move some of that fluid out. If there's a nodule there, you can do a little bit of massage in that area. But I would continue to rest this until you see the physical therapist. You can walk. You can try gentle stretching if stretching doesn't hurt. But if it hurts, I wouldn't do it. just right now you're about calming things down.
Exactly. Exactly. So I think everything, I agree with everything Lori said. If you feel like the compression sock helps, certainly continue to wear it. Some people feel like that rubbing or irritation can actually make it worse. So it's completely based on your symptoms, whether you want to continue with a compression sock or not.
And one of the questions is to think about why you're having it on one side and not the other.
Correct.
Because when you're running, theoretically, both legs are doing the same thing. So why are you having a serious problem on one side and not the other?
Yeah. So that's something to think about. It could be a misstep at somewhere along the line, maybe.
Right. Once this gets calmed down, that would be something that the physical therapist that William goes to see should investigate, looking at his running mechanics once he has a normal running posture for him to see if he's got some weakness up the chain or he overloads on his left side or something like that. But we want to prevent it from happening again.
There you go, William. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. I don't know if you guys want to comment on vitamin recommendations, but Steve called in to ask about all the changes in vitamin recommendations. For example, first vitamin E was all over, now vitamin D. Is that the same kind of problem?
So changes in vitamin recommendations. So, you know, the first thing is both vitamins D and vitamin E are fat-soluble vitamins, and therefore they are stored in your body. So unlike vitamin C, where if you take a lot of it, it'll be expelled. If you take a lot of vitamin D or vitamin E, you can sustain some toxicity from that. So the first thing is I wouldn't take those in excessive doses without guidance from my healthcare provider. So vitamin E has been proposed for joint health because of lubrication in the joint. And now vitamin D and vitamin D deficiencies are being proposed for a number of things, partly because we wear sunscreen all the time due to cancer, because kids aren't drinking milk like they used to, and so we're seeing deficiencies. So these things are all continuing to be researched, but realize that really good research, the kind that we were talking, not the predatory research, but the really good research, honestly takes years, because the effects of things like vitamins happen over a lifetime. We talked last show about epigenetics, and I think this health and nutrition and things like vitamin intake occur slowly over the course of a lifetime, and you're probably not going to see immediate effects for this. So to really understand this, they need to do large epidemiologic research like the Nurses' Health Study, where they enroll thousands of people and watch them for many years. So I would say talk to your healthcare provider.
Absolutely. And vitamin D in particular, we know as a general rule, if you live north of the Mason-Dixon line, a lot of people fall into a negative vitamin D balance, particularly in the wintertime due to our lack of sunlight. And as Lori said, now when we go out, we wear sunscreen all the time, which blocks between 97 and 99% of the rays that you need to absorb vitamin D. So if you do have concerns about vitamin D, and particularly bone health, because vitamin D is very important when it comes to calcium absorption, be very important thing to discuss with your physician. They can do a blood draw, see where your levels are, and kind of make some specific recommendations for you, because you don't want to overdose on this.
Steve
is right. The vitamins are an area that's replete with, you know, anecdotal things on the internet, and I took vitamin D and all my pain went away, or whatever it is. You really need to go to a reputable source that evaluates the evidence, the good evidence.
And thanks very much for that question, Steve. Appreciate it. Let's take a call here. Bob in southern Wisconsin up next. Hi, Bob.
Hi. I just wanted to share that I am a strong advocate of physical therapy numerous times with injuries. I've gained great results with that, so I'm definitely on board with what you're talking about, the benefits. I wanted to share with you I'm currently undergoing physical therapy for a misdiagnosis through an MD doctor about a pinched nerve in my back. All my gains have been done by physical therapy. And the other course of action would have been surgery to my back, which I'm not exactly excited to consider that. And I'm 73 years old, so a lot of people tell horror stories about that stuff. And I just wanted to toss that out as a, you know, go for it. Hallelujah, we've got physical therapy as an alternative. And I want to point out also, think about integrated therapy, people out there listening. Integrated therapy puts it all on the line. You have a lot of choices. That's all I got to say.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. And it's true. You know, any healthcare provider can get it wrong at various times.
Correct.
We have gotten it wrong at various times. I can think back, probably not in the too distant past, about things that I've gotten wrong. But particularly when it comes to things around your spine. So if he was, you know, had neck pain or back pain or hip pain, those structures are so deep and they... the symptoms overlap so much. If you look at a Venn diagram of the symptoms coming from a disc or a facet or your arthritic hip or any of a number of issues in that area, it is really hard to get it right. And one of the other issues in that in terms of diagnosis is that we always look for a single diagnosis, but so often it's not a single diagnosis. It's a facet problem and a disc problem and some arthritis problems all rolled into one. So as I said to somebody this morning, we sort of knock things off in a priority list. We go where, you know, we think we're going to achieve the most results, you know, whether it's an injection or whatever, and see how we do. So some of it is a bit of trial and error, and it's not an easy problem to figure out.
Right. Yep. And the other thing is physical therapists have the opportunity to spend more time with patients. And many times when the patient goes to the physician, they're in a pretty acute, exacerbated state, and it's very difficult to sort through things at that time. As symptoms calm down, like Lori said, it's easier to kind of rule certain conditions out. So it does make our job a little bit easier.
Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum and Lori Tyne-Brody from the University of Wisconsin. Lori, a physical therapist, athletic trainer, and the Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. And Jill, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our engineer. Jill Nadeau, our producer on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at all things in the physical therapy arena today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Lori Tyne-Brody and Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Tom in Random Lake up next. Tom, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I had a question for you. I think last time Jill and Lori were on, Larry, you mentioned that you had some knee injections about 8 years ago. I was wondering, were those syndesmic?
Yes.
What was it?
Yeah. It was syndesmic.
Now the syndesmic injection is a one-shot deal.
Yes.
I'm wondering if, like, should I be trying to, I had this done about 2 weeks ago. So far, I haven't had any relief. Should I be trying to, like, exercise that joint or leave it sit for a while? It said, like, 2 to 4 weeks before I could expect any, recovery to it.
Yeah, it was about 4 to 6 weeks for me, so.
So, yes, I would be doing some light activity that is not painful. So have you seen a physical therapist for this, Tom, and do you have an exercise program?
I did not, and I do not. I just had, you know, the injection by my orthopedic, and he didn't really say what I should really do about it.
Okay. So do you have access to any kind of exercise equipment or anything?
I do. Yeah, I do.
Like, such as, how about a bike?
Yeah, I have access to a fitness center.
Great. Okay.
The thing is, right now, the pain in that knee is so bad that I would be reluctant to try and do any exercise with it. Like, I can barely walk on
it. Eee, that's no good. Have you tried a pool? Do you have access to a pool?
Yeah. Oddly, that's how I injured it to begin with.
Oh. Okay.
This sounds complicated.
Yeah. Yeah. You have a lot going on, and I would suggest getting a referral to a physical therapist. Who can help you figure out what you can and can't do. So I'm not sure what happened with the pool for you, of how you injured it in the pool, but it sounds to me like you could use the guidance of somebody who's looking at your knee, evaluating you, looking you in the eye and talking to you about your history, how your knee feels, what's good and bad, and giving you some suggestions that you can try. Because clearly our sort of run-of-the-mill, these are the things people usually try are not fitting for you right now. So I think you need to see somebody face to face.
Right. And even if that injection starts alleviating your symptoms, as Larry will attest, it's still very important that you are on an exercise program. Right, Larry?
Yeah, absolutely. And I've managed to stay in that program for probably, it's been about 8 years ago, and it helped.
Yep. Yeah. He's still going.
Yes.
Did my 3 miles this morning.
Good for
awesome.
You.
Yeah. So if you're not turning the corner after that 4 to 6 weeks, you need to go back. There, you know, Synvisc works for people who have a certain degree of arthritis. It doesn't work for everybody, so it may not be the right fix for you. So I would go back and say, you know, look, I did this and I tried therapy. I've done the things that I'm supposed to do, and this is where I'm at.
But get your appointment with your physical therapist. Hey, thank you very much, Tom. Good luck. Appreciate your call. Pat in Waukesha, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Thank you for listening to me.
Sure.
I had fallen on my knee about 4 years ago onto a ceramic tile coming in from the patio and kind of injured it. It hurt a lot. And I just kind of let it go for a while and then went to an orthopedic doctor. And he did do the steroid injections, and they helped for the first one or two. And then he did do the gel injection, one of those. But I had also been going to a chiropractor for other issues. And my chiropractor got a new therapy. It's called MLS laser light therapy. And I started that in March and went through that, and it supposedly helps build stem cells and release things. It's painless to do. It has been awesome how it has helped pain management-wise.
Oh.
I went from a 9-10 down to 1-2. I mean, I can move around. The structure, I've got osteoarthritis in the knee. The knee structure hasn't changed real much. I mean, it's supposedly stem cells are supposed to help strengthen ligaments and do things. But I just wanted your opinion on, right now I'm on it like once a month. I just go in for a treatment when I feel that it's starting to bother me a little bit more. Do you have any positive or negative things that you've heard about this laser therapy?
Well, what I can say positive about it is that it has worked for you.
Right,
so,
exactly.
Does it feel warm when you do it? Is it a cold laser or a warm
laser?
No,
it's a cold laser. Mm-hmm. They call it, let me get the name here. They call it multi-wave lock system. So that's what the MLS is.
Yeah, you know, in physical therapy, we've gone through a variety of different kinds of light systems and laser systems, and right now at this point there's not a large body of evidence that supports their use for clinical pain relief or improvements in things that we can measure, nor anything related to changes in stem cell. But that doesn't mean that it isn't working on some other level that we don't yet understand. And so I would really have nothing negative to say, except we don't know very much about it. And on the positive side, I'd say it worked for you.
Right. Yeah. And many times that's where good randomized controlled trials actually come into play. There's enough people out there like Pat who say, boy, this has really helped me, and then people want to understand the science behind it, and then the research kind of catches up with what's happening clinically. We have a lot of anecdotal information like this that comes through before we have necessarily the good scientific rigor that supports exactly why it is happening. So as long as there's no contraindications to it, there's no negative side effects, and it's making you feel better, then it's perfectly
fine.
Exactly.
There you go, Pat. Thank you so much for calling. And let's turn to Brian in Oshkosh next. Hi, Brian.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Good. Appreciate the call.
About 7-8 weeks ago, I had some rather large masses taken out of my chest, and I had to cut the sternum. I'm still having pain in the upper part of the sternum, the manubrium. And I just wondered if it was when it would be possible for me to start working out again and try to strengthen my musculature in my chest.
So did they do heart surgery?
Oh, no, I had no heart surgery, and I had no lung surgery. All that is just fine. I just had these masses in the pleural cavity taken out that were pretty obnoxious and kept me from a lot of activities because of the size.
So you were just cracked open, per se. So you went through the procedure of having your rib cage cut open for them to remove these masses.
Right. It was to cut down my sternum in a normal way.
Yep.
And so have they cleared you from the surgical perspective?
Well,
to return to activity?
The incision is all healed up, and it's already been 7 or 8 weeks. I just wondered if there are some things that I should be aware of if and when I do start working out soon, or if it's okay to deal with it now.
Yes. So what kind of things do you like to do?
Well, I was just interested mostly in trying to get the musculature developed back in my chest again.
Okay. Sure. So I would see a physical therapist to get guidance on this, because it's not your garden variety, I had rotator cuff surgery or I had a meniscectomy. This is, they opened up your chest, and so you have issues of healing, you have bony healing, you have the joints where your ribs meet your breastbone, and those are little synovial joints, your costosternal joints, and you can develop what's called costochondritis, some inflammation in those joints. You have the muscular attachments of your large pectoral muscles that attach to your breastbone. So there's a whole number of issues there from the musculoskeletal perspective that need to be considered in getting you back to activity, as well as the stages of healing.
Right. So. And you have to think about the fact that all of these ribs attach in the back as well. So now you have the thorax is very unique in that you have these ribs that attach in the front and the back. So you may find tightness in your back as well that can be addressed by a physical therapist. And the other thing is to work on the mobility from the inside out with teaching you certain breathing techniques and positioning you to kind of fill one lung more so than the other to kind of create that expansion is something a physical therapist could help you with.
Yeah.
All right.
So certainly returning to things like walking, moving, active exercise, absolutely. Working on breathing to really fill your lungs and expand your chest. Working to stretch your chest muscles, like in a corner stretch, to open that all up. You could certainly start now. But in terms of getting back to anything like weightlifting, I would seek some guidance, or you may end up with a mess that you have to then unravel.
Right. Exactly.
Ooh, yes, for sure. Good luck, Brian. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Mary in Madison, we turn to you next. Hi, Mary.
Hi there. I have a cervical radiculopathy going on, so I had an MRI, and it's C6 and C7 disc bulges. I'm over 60, so it's a degenerative situation. And this came on pretty suddenly, about almost 16 weeks ago. And so I hit it pretty hard initially with physical therapy, chiropractic, acupuncture, and the physical therapist discharged me a while ago at the point at which I was going to get some injections, which I did at C7. And those have been about like 3 weeks ago now, and those like didn't help at all. And I had initially... had much improvement. Like, it was really bad at first, like, you know, 8 on a 10 scale of pain in my arm, my forearm, in my hand, numbness and tingling in my hand and forearm. So the pain is much improved. I don't always have that in my forearm anymore. But that numbness and tingling is still there. In fact, I wouldn't describe it like the nice words like numbness and tingling. It's like stabbing in my forefinger and thumb off and on. And so I'm guessing the next stop here is to consider surgery. I have an appointment after the holidays. But can you help me with that? Like, what should I be asking the surgeon in particular?
Those are great questions.
Yeah. I'd probably start with, are there any other conservative interventions that haven't been tried before you go to surgery?
Right, absolutely. And then if you have indeed exhausted all of your conservative care, which, so I hear you say you've had an injection, you might be able to, there may be a different type of injection or a different location. They may want to try the injection with prior to considering that conservative management has failed, then the next most important thing you can ask is what kind of outcomes your physician has. So what are the short and long-term outcomes for your patients? What kind of improvement do they see, with especially regards to your chief complaint, which sounds like the issues within your hand? So is this going to help my hand? Is this going to alleviate these symptoms? Those would be really good questions to ask.
And also, what types of surgeries are available? There's not just one type of surgery for a disc herniation. There are a variety of different techniques, and what are the pros and cons of those, and what would be the prognosis down the road? So for example, in the spine, when you have a fusion, what we see happen is a faster rate of degeneration at the levels above and below that fusion, because those areas are seeing an increased load after your fusion. So what are the long-term risks and benefits of different types of surgical procedures in your case?
There you go. Thank you so much for calling. But first, make sure that there are other options
you want to exhaust,
other than surgery.
Right. Exhaust all your conservative management options.
All right. Thanks, Mary. Good luck. Appreciate your call. Rana in Rice Lake will turn to you next. Hi, Rana.
Hi, Larry. Good morning. Good morning, morning to the experts. 2 years ago, I had a full hip replacement on my right side. And we've kind of been getting along, so-so. it started, I do not a ton of exercise, but I physically exercise pretty hard 4 or 5 times a week for about an hour. And I'm finding that it started to really irritate me most recently. So I went into the surgeon who performed it, and he found a very sore spot and did a cortisone injection where he said they pull those muscles back when they're doing that replacement. And I'm just wondering why after 2 years, you know, is this deciding to kind of give me a little bit of an issue? And what would you recommend would be some additional just real focused pelvic exercises that I can add in my program?
So my guess is when they did your approach, did they do a post or a lateral approach? Do you know? Were your restriction?
My scar is on my.
More on the backside. On your keister. Okay, perfect. That's exactly what I needed to know. So what they have to do then is they typically have to split your gluteus medius muscle, which is a muscle that really helps us kind of stabilize our pelvis, like you alluded to, when we're doing walking activity, things like that. So, did you see a physical therapist immediately after you had your hip replacement done?
Yes, before and after, and I did everything plus that I was supposed to do, because I know that that's the road to a good recovery.
Great. That's wonderful. And are you still doing those specific, isolated, biased exercises for those particular muscle groups?
You know, you're bringing up a good point. I'm not, and maybe that's just where I need to go back to the beginning.
It may just need that you need a little bit of a refresher, 1 or 2 visits with that prior physical therapist to bring back or bring up, resurrect those isolated biased exercises to work those muscle groups. So I hear you say you're active 4 to 5 times a week, which is wonderful. Most of those movements that we do need your gluteus medius somewhat, but you can also do those movements and not really load that muscle appropriately. So really getting isolated biased exercises for those muscles to make sure they're doing their job is probably a good idea.
And they may have some new things for you. You may need to do some specific rolling in that area, some deep massage with a tennis ball or something to really perhaps break up some scar tissue that happened after your surgery when they go through that muscle and disrupt that tendon. So there may be a couple new things that they give to you for where you're at currently.
There you go, Rana. Thank you so much for calling, and good luck to you. And you can join in too at 1-800-642-1234. Vicki in Mount Horeb up next. Hi, Vicki.
Hello. I was diagnosed with spinal stenosis at the end of October and have been in physical therapy, and it's helped tremendously. But I guess I'm kind of afraid to go back to doing normal, you know, the normal activity that I had been doing, for fear that I'm going to injure it. And then also, is there anything more that I can do? I mean, as I said, the physical therapy seems to have helped a lot, but then I'll still have days where I feel the twinges and I'm going, oh, what did I do? What advice, I guess, would you have for me?
Are you done with physical therapy now?
I have one more on Thursday.
Perfect. So what you need
What
you need to do is bridge the gap between your structured PT and your functional exercise. So what we see happen often, and you know, this is a broad advice for people out there, is you get towards the end of your physical therapy and you go and you say, well, yeah, I'm feeling great, things are a lot better, and you want your physical therapist to be happy, you know, and be proud of the work that you've done. But yet there's a gap between your structured PT exercises that might focus on a specific area and your use of that in your functional activities. So there needs to be this transition from your structured PT to what I call life and wellness. And so questions about, you know, how do I roll this into my walking program? How do I have to modify my, you know, my exercises or my things that I do at home? These are the things that I want to do. Do you feel like I'm ready to do those things? And how do I get back into those things? So sometimes what we do at this phase is we take those activities that you want to do and we scale them back to a level that we think you can manage right now, and we use your functional activity as a way to progress your PT program rather than giving you a new, you know, leg raise exercise.
Right.
So talking to your physical therapist how to bridge that gap between your structured PT and your return to activity is really important. And then the other thing I was going to say about spinal stenosis is you are going to move certain ways and you're going to get a tweak because that would be the nature of spinal stenosis. So the key is just to be careful, to really use the lessons that you've learned from your PT and incorporate them into every day. So for, again, people do their exercises, they get on the floor, they do their transversus abdominis exercises and this and that, but then they forget to engage their transversus when they're up reaching to their cupboard for that pot or pan. So carrying over the things you learned in PT into your functional activities is really key.
Right. I think of physical therapy as the training wheels, and we're just slowly going to take those off and let you handle things on your own. So I say it's training wheels and a little bit of mother may I. Mother may I do this, mother may I do that, mother should I do this, mother shouldn't I do that.
And do you, and those little twerks or
tweaks,
stabs,
yep.
Mm-hmm. Do you learn to know what causes them?
Well, usually most people can tell you what causes them. Many times it's moving a certain direction. A lot of times in your back, it's rotation. So teaching people how to be aware of where they are in space. And so often when I see people move, I see them move without being conscious of the position of their back or engaging their core muscles to support and stabilize their back so that instead of the muscles taking the load, they're placing the load on the spinal structures themselves. And when your spinal structure has stenosis, it'll bark at you.
Right.
There you go, Vicki. Thank you so much for calling. Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guests. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at all kinds of physical therapy issues today with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, UW physical therapists. Always great to have them come by. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining in. Christina emailed to ask, would physical therapy help foot problems? She's in her mid-40s, has pronounced knocked knees since childhood, seems to have a neuroma or two, recurring plantar fasciitis, and the beginning of a bunion. She loves walking and fears a disability in the next decade if she can't get any help or if she gets no help. Is physical therapy helpful? What should she look for?
So that's a great question, and she also provided us with lots of information sounding like she may have some postural changes which are causing her to load her feet perhaps a little bit abnormally than what we would expect. So yes, physical therapy would definitely be helpful for Christina, especially since she's interested in doing a weight-bearing activity. Walking is really important. So seeing a physical therapist, probably someone who has a strong orthopedic background, perhaps an orthopedic clinical specialist or a sports clinical specialist would be ideal for her. And that person would do a really good job of doing a nice lower extremity biomechanical assessment for her, make recommendations on any exercises that would be best for her to perform, if they identify some weakness in muscles, some tightness in muscles, things like that. And then can also make some recommendations regarding shoes that she should wear, surfaces which she should walk on. And the PT would go all the way up the chain. So she's mentioning some knocked knees, and perhaps she has some hip weakness that might be adding to her feet problem.
Hmm.
So PT would look at that as well.
All right.
But it's good for her to be proactive and have this interest. Absolutely.
Let's take another call. Ann in Milwaukee, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi, good morning. In the last year or so when I hike, I've had urinary incontinence issues. I'm a female aged 59. And I've heard that this is a common problem, but no one wants to talk about it.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
I've been told to try biofeedback through a PT or OT and to not have surgery because scar tissue will cause lifetime problems. So I have a couple questions. What is biofeedback? How does it work? How do I find a good biofeedback therapist? How long, like how many visits might this take? With my insurance, I'm going to have to pay out of pocket for the therapy.
Great question. So biofeedback is using electronic sensors to see if your muscles are activated the way they should. What you need to start with is a pelvic floor physical therapist. You need to start with a women's health specialist, and they may have strategies for you to use for strengthening your pelvic floor muscles that don't require a biofeedback machine, or they may do some biofeedback in a treatment session and teach you what it feels like to contract the appropriate muscles in your pelvic floor, and then you can do that training at home. So you may need to see that pelvic floor physical therapist only for a couple of visits, particularly if you're paying out of pocket, and they can train you in the things to do and give you home exercises to do. There are also tools you can buy online to facilitate that pelvic floor exercise program. So I would start with a pelvic floor PT. I would also call around and tell people, particularly if you can find someone at a private practice who has a sliding fee scale or has a special fee scale for self-pay.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go to a larger institution, I think those things are not as flexible. So I would call around and ask people, what are your fees for people who are paying cash or have a self-pay program?
Mm-hmm.
So I would look for that as well. But a pelvic floor PT can help you with all of those things.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Good luck, Ann. Thank you so much for calling. And we'll turn to Kathleen in Winchester next. Hi, Kathleen.
Hello. I just wanted to ask the therapist if they had used Peter Ogoscue's static stretches for people with back trouble or hip, knee, shoulder. He says it, in his book, Pain Free, that it really gets people in alignment. It solved all my problems. I had sort of middle deep muscle pain, and this I did them every day for a month and a half, and it was cured. And now I just use them, you know, a couple times a week to make sure it stays away. They're so simple.
Right.
Lying on the floor.
Yeah,
yes.
Thank you so much for calling. Jill, yep. You were going to comment.
Sure. So Peter Ogoscue has a method of stretching and mobility type of exercises that is geared mostly for the lumbar spine and pelvic region. And it's called the Ogoscue method. And there are some very specific stretches and mobility exercises that the method encourages people to use. I've certainly used those numerous suggestions that he has within my practice. I haven't necessarily categorized it as the Egoscue method, but I've certainly used those positions, et cetera, for patients who I think have impairments that need that to be addressed.
Right. So the physical therapist does an evaluation on the patient, and some of the exercises that are part of the Egoscue method are things that physical therapists routinely use in their practice. So I'd have to say there isn't anything particularly novel about the exercises that he uses, except he has put them together and packaged them as a set of exercises to do. So we use whichever ones of those, or we use exercises that we have created based upon where we see the impairments, weaknesses, inflexibility, etc., and we put together a program for that person. So in general, I would say anything that's sort of pre-packaged, one size fits all, will fit many people, but it's not going to fit everybody. Yeah. So you know, if you want to try that as an alternative to go to seeking medical care, certainly give it a try. And if, for like Kathleen, it solves her problems,
right?
Awesome,
right?
That's
yeah,
fantastic,
awesome.
And right. Stay out of the medical system.
Exactly.
Fantastic,
right?
But for those people who can't take sort of the generic packaged program and need something specific, then that's when you step into the medical system,
right.
And look for assistance.
Kathleen, thank you for bringing that up. Appreciate
you
your call.
And also, that just as an aside to that, not unlike things like Pilates or yoga, et cetera, sometimes after you see a physical therapist and we sort of help dig you out of that hole and get you up to a place of maintenance, programs like the Egoscue method are ways to maintain the gains
right.
that have been made in physical therapy.
Absolutely.
And it sounds like that's what Kathleen is doing, and certainly she needs to keep those things up.
Yeah. Thanks, Kathleen. And Paula in Plymouth, Wisconsin, it's your turn. Hi, Paula.
Hi, thank you so much. Yes, last Thursday I was, I stand all day when I work, and I all of a sudden I felt like it wasn't a loud pop, but I felt a pop or a rubbing. And ever since, every time I take a step, my right knee, it rubs or pops one or several times, a little bit of swelling, no pain. I have an appointment for a physical therapist, but they couldn't fit me until the 28th. I'm in pretty good shape. I exercise regularly, and a lot of the exercises I saw online in regards to strengthening your quads and so forth, I do already.
Great. So where exactly is this pop? Do you feel like it's under your kneecap, or does it feel deeper than that?
Well, it feels like it's on the outside, like lateral, and it is deep, maybe. It didn't feel like my kneecap so much as it felt like the back of the leg was starting to swell. But sometimes I feel a little bit in front of the top of the kneecap, but it's more on the outside. And
Okay.
So tell me again what you were doing when it happened.
I was standing. I stand.
Just standing.
All day.
Just standing.
And then it's like maybe I turned and I kind of felt it.
Okay.
I have a really tight IT band.
Okay. Well, that's helpful too.
Yeah. So the things that pop on the outside of your knee, number one, your IT band. So it tends to pop and snap over the lateral epicondyle of the femur. So as you twist and turn and rotate, you'll get popping there. So you could have some bursitis there. There's a bursa that sits between the IT band and the lateral epicondyle. And if it's a little bit swollen, that band is really going to snap back and forth across there. So then number two on the differential list would be a meniscus tear. Mm-hmm. So if you're standing weight-bearing and you rotate and twist, you can get a little meniscal tear on the outside of your knee. You'll feel that on the outside and in back. So in the meantime, I'd say continue exercising, doing things that don't hurt. Ice your knee, particularly at the end of the day or after an exercise session, and continue to monitor your symptoms and see if you see any pattern to it in terms of time of day, activity level, standing, sitting, sleeping, etc. And that'll all help your physical therapist when you see that person later this month.
There you go. Thank you so much. John in Brown Deer, do you have a question for us?
Thank you for taking my call. I would like to know if your guests are familiar with any type of mesenchymal stem cell therapy that is being done, research into that for replacing or regrowing a disc in the spine, especially in the lumbar area. And if so, what progress is being made on that research or the development of a stem cell to perform that therapy?
So, briefly, yes, there is research being done on that, and there are places that are actually doing that in the spine, typically on the West Coast, Montana, and those states. There's not a lot being done in the Midwest, to the best of my knowledge, and the results are still mixed. We don't have any solid evidence and large randomized trials that suggest that we're getting good patient outcomes. There's good basic science, but it hasn't bridged the gap to patient outcomes yet.
There we go. John, thank you so much for calling. Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guests today. And they're going to be with us right up until 12:30 to answer your physical therapy questions. We'll take a quick look at the news and weather, find out what else is in store for us, and then we will be back. So you stay with us. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW's Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic, and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison, talking, of course, about physical therapy issues of all kinds, and I hope you'll join in. We have some open lines. Get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And we've had some questions about whether or not physical therapy can be helpful in a situation like tinnitus, and maybe how does tinnitus relate to dizziness or maybe just sort of ringing in your ear, that kind of thing?
Sure. So there are many inner ear disturbances that patients can acquire. So patients can get ringing in their ears. You can have dizziness that can be associated with an inner ear problem. Dizziness can be associated with many other conditions as well. It can be associated with a cardiovascular issue, dehydration, a medication issue. And then there's another inner ear disturbance called vertigo. And physical therapists can successfully treat certain types of vertigo and certain types of dizziness that are related to inner ear pathology. Not all dizziness is related to the inner ear. Unfortunately, tinnitus or ringing in the ear is typically not amenable to physical therapy. It can be a symptom of something else, but as a general rule, it's not very successfully treated with physical therapy. There are inner ear conditions that PTs can treat. Tinnitus is typically not one of them.
So there we go. Glad to have that question answered. Let's take, here's William emailed quite a while back that he has a case of golfer's elbow medial epicondylitis that persists despite prolonged rest, of course, of a leave and a splint in his forearm. Does physical therapy have anything to offer as a treatment for this?
Oh, absolutely. This is a classic case of what we see, and that is people get some pain around their elbow, either on the inside, which is what William has, medial epicondylitis, or on the outside, tennis elbow, lateral epicondylitis, and they just rest for a while. They say, well, I'm going to stop doing whatever I'm doing, and then go back to activity. They go back to activity, and lo and behold, the pain is immediately there again because they haven't rehabilitated that tendon or the tendon attachment to the bone. And interestingly, the Aleve, the anti-inflammatory, didn't seem to help either. And what we see in many of these cases is that there's not actually an active inflammation, but it's a degenerative process, which is why the anti-inflammatory doesn't help. The splint, useful to help rest it, but then you, if you think about resting it, it is now getting weakened because it is not being used. So this already inflamed and annoyed tendon is now further weakened because it has been rested. So then the corollary to that, the other side of that teeter-totter, is we need to now build it back up with strengthening, and that's what physical therapy would do, would be to guide William through a strengthening program to build up the strength of that tendon to be able to tolerate the loads that he is placing on it.
Yep.
All right, there we go. Let's go to Peggy in Darlington next for a question. Hi, Peggy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a rather complicated situation, and I'm looking for some guidance on what to do, and also if you can give me some feedback on air, but how could I get a doctor to refer me for a combination of issues that I'm dealing with?
Okay.
I have a long history of osteoarthritis, and I've had quite a few surgeries. First with bunionectomies on both feet, and then my right hip replacement and a left hip resurfacing, two shoulder replacements, and a spinal fusion.
Wow.
So, okay.
And I ended up with dropped foot from the spinal fusion, and so I have a brace that I wear.
Yep.
And now my left knee, which is on the side of the dropped foot, has end-stage osteoarthritis. But when I went to the doctor to see it, I wondered why I had hip pain in my left hip. So they did a blood test and said I'm high in cobalt and chromium in the blood, and I should have that redone. But my concern is that every bone is connected to something else, and my left foot collapses, my knee goes out, my hip hurts.
Right.
And I've been putting most of my weight on my right foot, and I wondered why that foot was hurting so much, and I found out that I have end-stage osteoarthritis in my big toe and second toe on my right foot. And then this morning, when I got up, it felt like my my right kneecap went out of place. Mm-hmm. And caused me excruciating pain. Now, over the years, I've had physical therapy, but it always seems like the doctor prescribes it for one issue. But right. My issues are so multi.
Yeah,
correct.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
Multi-joint. Right. Yep.
And like no doctor, a doctor will say, "Oh, I'll resurface your hip," or somebody else will say, "Oh, I'll do your knee." But the thing is, what do I do? And how do I?
So
figure out.
Right. So what probably what I do is, because you have so many areas that are bothering you, I'd probably go to my primary physician rather than going to the orthopedic who's going to look at your knee or your hip or your foot or your back or your shoulder and ask for a referral to PT for multi-joint osteoarthritis.
Mm-hmm.
So that way you're not picking and choosing a joint, but you are going in with the understanding that you have arthritis in multiple joints. And from what I hear, my recommendation would be that you seek therapy in a pool, because what you end up doing, and sometimes when I say to people that I'm recommending the pool and they wonder why, it's because we can work on your hip and your back and your shoulder and your knee and your foot with the same set of exercises, because you are immersed in a resistive medium. If I'm treating you on land, I'm going to give you three exercises for this foot and two other exercises for your other foot because it has a different problem. I'm going to give you something for this knee, but something for your other knee because it's a little bit different. And then right hip, left hip, but you can't do those things because of your back, you can't get in the positions that you need. So from hearing what you've said, to me, your best shot at getting better is exercising
right.
in a pool.
I agree completely. That'll be a safe place for you, really good place for you to work on your mobility and get you a little bit stronger, because you do have so many joints involved.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. Peggy, I hope you can follow up on that. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Chris in Glendale, your turn. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I have been diagnosed with trigeminal neuralgia of my left face. And the neurologist had mentioned that sometimes physical therapy can be done on the neck. I'm wondering if you've had any experience with this.
Yeah, so trigeminal neuralgia is cranial nerve 5, and it innervates a sensory and a motor component to your face. And there are physical therapists that are trained very specifically in cervical and facial pathology. And as a matter of fact, looking where you live, there are 3 in the state of Wisconsin, and 2 of them are where you live. So, right.
Good
yeah,
for you.
Yeah.
Good luck.
So if you wouldn't mind, Chris, leaving your contact information with Jill Nadeau, and I can email you some information. But trigeminal neuralgia is a very specific facial nerve involvement. And yes, you can treat the neck and you can treat up into the face. And that's a kind of a highly specialized area in physical therapy. And I can refer you to somebody who can take care of that.
All right. There you go. Thank you so much, Chris. And be sure to leave your information with Jill. She's right there to take it. Let's go to Joanne in Mequon. Hi, Joanne. Joanne, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, I have had balance issues for several years now. I've had multiple falls. I have no aura. I have no dizziness. I just hit the ground, hit my head. I've had every possible specialist look at me. I've had brain scans and everything, and the final solution is always walk with a cane. I've been to audiologists, neurologists, and so forth, and it's really frustrating for me. If I'm walking from point A to point B and paying attention, I'm okay. But if I'm out working in the yard or in my house, I'm on the floor or on the driveway without explanation. And I've been to a balanced physical therapist, and I do all those exercises. I've done water exercise. I'm at a loss, and I am 75, and I don't want to have a fall.
Right, right,
real,
absolutely.
Really serious.
Do you have problems with any joints, any other joints, or just falls?
I had my knee replaced about 4.5 years ago, and I associate my falls post-surgery. I've been back to him, and he said my knee is fine. My knee is not fine. It still hurts.
So your falls started after your knee replacement?
Yes.
Okay. And are your joints very mobile? Do you feel like you're really flexible? Did you get your motion back in your knee well, or is your knee?
Oh, yeah. I'm very flexible, all joints. I'm very flexible. I make sure that I do exercise and stretch and all that all the time.
Okay. So, but do you feel like your joints are excessively flexible or just normal flexible because you stretch?
Normal.
Okay. All right. Because sometimes people who are hypermobile have more problems with their joints because they don't necessarily know where they are in space. So one of the things that I see frequently is people who are hypermobile, who do have falls because they don't have the sensory feedback from their joints about where they are in space.
Do you lose consciousness when you fall, Joanne, or you're always conscious?
No, not at all. No,
okay.
But my eyesight and my brain feel slammed. You know, they feel mobile in my head when I hit the driveway.
Do you have any numbness around your lips or any quadrilateral numbness, so numbness into your hands and feet?
Nope, nothing.
And no nystagmus of your eyes, no rapid movement of your eyes?
Nope.
Okay.
And how do
nothing.
You do with sit to stand when you stand up from sitting in a chair? Do you get lightheaded?
I do not get lightheaded. My knee hurts me if I sit too long, so I'm slow getting up.
Okay.
But other than that, no.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I tell you, you know, you've been to many professionals. It seems like you've run the gambit. You've seen physical therapists for falls. I don't think I'm going to be able to come up with another answer for you, you know, over the radio without examining you, but it seems as though you've been thoroughly examined and no one has a good solution. I don't see that you've missed anything.
I don't either. I can't think of anything.
Yeah. So the only sort of outlier that I had was hypermobility, which sometimes happens and causes multiple falls without any other notable examination findings other than hypermobile joints.
Would Joanne be benefit then from going, you know, just having her mobility assessed by someone to see maybe she is hypermobile and doesn't
realize?
You know,
my hope is that when she saw the physical therapist for her falls, that was part of their screen.
Correct.
But it isn't always. It isn't always. So.
Right.
So if you hyperextend your elbows, if you can bring your thumb to the to your forearm when you bend your wrist, you know, those are a couple of the screeners that you use. If you Google hypermobility online, it'll show you the Baton score, and you mm-hmm. can look at that, and you can see if you fit that criteria, and that might be a path you can investigate.
At least a way to...
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
A
right.
step.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. In the
That's
meantime,
very complicated.
Not to be too... facetious, but use your cane.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I wish I had a better answer for
right,
you.
Right.
Thank you, Joanne. Good luck. Appreciate your call very much. Well, we have Grant in Eau Claire with a question. Hi, Grant.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Well, I have a problem with my left knee. It seems that the patella is displaced, it's way off to the left of my knee, and it seems to be rubbing on the femur and the lower bone, and it causes inflammation in my knee.
Mm-hmm.
I got some advice a few years ago from an orthopedic surgeon, told me to do some exercises, which I have done to help a little. But I was talking with my PCP the other day, and he said I might try using a knee brace that has a hole in front of the knee brace that mm-hmm. he thought might pull the patella back into place. And I'm just wondering whether there's any credibility to that or, you know, possible to do something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he's talking about a knee brace that has what we call a lateral buttress or a kind of reinforcement on the lateral side to kind of push your kneecap back in or keep your knee in good alignment. It would certainly be worth a try. However, if you haven't seen a physical therapist for this to see what else can be done, such as strengthening of your quadriceps, making sure that the muscles on the outside of your leg are not too tight and pulling your patella laterally, making sure your hip has good strength, those would be things I would do or are as equally as important as the knee brace.
All right. There we go. Thank you so much for calling. And Harold in Superior. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes. Hi.
Hi, Harold.
Yeah, I had a fall. I slid off the end of one of the steps on our carpeted stairway coming down, and my foot slipped another step down, and I went over backwards, and I got pretty doggone banged up. I got some serious swelling in my right leg, and a lot of that, it was a severe bruise, and it goes well beyond that. I got a broken shoulder, broken rib.
Oh boy.
Yeah, it's been fun, and I'm still in a lot of pain, but I take warfarin, and it's happened twice before when I fall, and my leg swells up pretty severely. Severely, so
right.
I'm trying to treat that. In fact, I needed to have a transfusion. My blood pressure was like 58 over 52.
Oh dear.
And I had to have plasma besides a unit. and but the swelling is still pretty severe. So I'm wondering what I might do to get that down at this point, 3 weeks into it. So I think it's a little bit late for ice.
Well, has someone examined your knee?
Well, my knee is okay. It's just the side of my leg, and somehow I even banged the other leg and shoulder.
Real
graceful.
Okay, but you didn't twist your knee or hyperextend your knee or anything like that?
No.
Okay. Well, definitely with the fact that you're anticoagulated on the warfarin, that encourages, unfortunately, all that blood pooling, which you're familiar with. So things you can do would be to elevate your leg as much as possible when you're not walking around and do a lot of ankle pumps. So pump your foot up and down frequently to kind of use your muscles to kind of force some of that fluid back.
Right. So, and if you have any kind of compression stocking, right. Do you have any TED hose or anything like that?
Well, I do from others, and they tell me they only last for so long. But I also was going to order these zippered compressions.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
TED socks, I just don't like at all.
Sure, right.
Any experience with the zippered ones?
I know people who use them and they seem to work just fine. I think all compression stockings are very hard to get on regardless of how you get them on. Yeah.
Right,
they're
exactly.
Tough. They're tough.
But yeah, so the ankle pumps are good, the movement and the ankle pumps, but also getting up and walking, just using your calf muscles to move some of that fluid through and then sitting down and elevating it again. Get up and walk to pump fluid, and then sit down and elevate again. Just keep thinking about that activity as a pump that's going to pump fluid out of your lower leg.
There you go. Thank you so much, Harold, for calling. Appreciate your call. Dora Lee in Madison says her husband was advised to ask for physical therapy, a treatment called active release. Do you know anything about that particular?
Yes, active release therapy, ART. What it's classically kind of called pin and stretch. And what you do is you kind of put some pressure on the muscle that you're trying to stretch and you lengthen it as you do this. So it's one of numerous physical therapy interventions that a PT could perform. The physical therapist would decide whether that intervention was appropriate for the patient or not.
And if you have surgery and wind up with screws in your hip, how long before you can be involved in physical activity?
That's a great question, and it kind of depends upon the reason the screws are there. So if it was a fracture, if it was a traumatic fracture, it will take some time. But typically, healing usually takes 6 to 8 weeks. But some activity can start before that. So I guess you would need to consult with your physician, and then be prescribed.
Typically around 6 to 8, but talk to your doctor.
Absolutely.
About it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. And with that, we are out of time. Jill, Lori, thank you so much. You're back on January 14th, and we'll do this all over again. Thank you so much. Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guests tomorrow, at 11, Tom Wilmoth is back with us to talk about holiday music, and we'll be playing a lot of holiday music right here on the Ideas Network. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots more in store.